Hello and welcome to the Spandex and Wine podcast. I'm your host, Robin Hackney, and I'm so happy that you're here. This podcast is a place for conversations about balancing a healthy lifestyle and being happy. More specifically, happy hour. Together, we'll explore all things wellness and wine. I hope you learn a little, laugh a lot, and along the way, know you're not alone on this balanced wellness journey. Ready to jump in? Pour something in your glass that makes you happy because it's time for Spandex and Wine. Hello and welcome to the Spandex and Wine podcast. I'm your host, Robin Hackney, and I want to thank you for being here. Today's conversation is so interesting. My guest is Jocelyn Kate. She's a recovering codependent, people pleaser, and perfectionist turned master mindfulness practitioner, trauma-informed yoga instructor, and certified ritual guide who helps people let go of toxic habits, situations, and relationships through intuitive routines and mindfulness practices. Doesn't that sound amazing? I know we could all use that. So here is Jocelyn. Well, hello and welcome to the Spandex and Wine podcast, Jocelyn. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I am very intrigued by everything that you do. In fact, I was talking to a client earlier today. Every year we talk about a word of the year and we feel like mindful is a good word for 2024. And you're a mindfulness coach. What is a mindfulness coach?
So a mindfulness coach is someone that helps people, like I help people incorporate mindfulness into their lives because, you know, there's a little bit of a disconnect between what mindfulness is and what practices people can use and how they can overlay those practices into the moods and the experiences they have that are causing them to seek out the mindfulness practices. Because most often it's like executive function or anxiety or depression. And so they're seeking out mindfulness practices to help them through those experiences. And so a coach, like with, you know, athletes or anything, kind of bridges the gap between, you know, what you know and what you want to be doing and really putting it into like a practice in your own life. Because we all have different routines and we all have different habits and we all have different histories. And so incorporating different things really takes identifying your personal journey and then seeing what intuitively fits.
Okay. Oh my gosh. It's so interesting. And how did you get to this point? What's your story?
Yeah, I am myself a survivor of childhood emotional neglect. And so through my own therapy, I was in weekly therapy for about 3 years. I had been in, you know, prior to that, but when I really started my healing journey, I was going weekly for 3 years. I started my yoga teacher training. I specialized in trauma-informed yoga. And then I went into a master mindfulness course. And so kind of through all of these trainings, I was able to identify really what my own issues were in codependency, perfectionism, people pleasing. And I was able to find practices and tools that helped me, you know, really return to calming myself because it was really so much about the regulation and the self-regulation. And I found that I feel like the information is sort of scattered and the way that people understand how therapy works and the way that they understand what yoga is used for, I feel like it's like scattered. And so what I wanted to do was really condense in what it means to have a spiritual practice, what it means to be, you know, on a self-discovery journey and help people who felt like me, who felt like they were pouring too much into their relationships and who felt like they really had no purpose in life or they didn't understand the idea of purpose in life. And that, in my own opinion, I feel like when you don't understand your purpose in life, that really kind of becomes a wedge in, you know, that individuation. And so people start to feel separate from themselves and they start to feel the anxiety and the depression and the disconnect. And that was my own journey. So because I recognized that the information was so scattered, I thought I wanted to develop a program to like work with people. But then I also put it into a course. So that's what is launching in January. I
Nice.
put it all down to like literally a step-by-step framework for people because, it's adding in mindfulness into your life is the same thing as revamping your like health foods, your grocery list. You kind of have to look at your habits and say, I'm somebody who doesn't like to cook a lot. So if you're transitioning into healthier foods, you need to know what recipes are going to support what your habits already are. And, people struggle with that because if you're somebody like who's ever tried to revamp your grocery list and eat healthier, that happens where, you're super motivated and you buy all the vegetables and then they go bad because it's not really within your capacity yet to be cooking dinner every night. And so I feel like it's the same with mindfulness practices. So I put a course together to sort of walk people through integrating those new habits.
Hey guys, it's Robin. Sorry for the interruption. So you know that I have a podcast, Spandex and Wine. Obviously, you're here listening right now, but you may not know that I also own a fitness business, Simply Fitness. And I've been in the industry for over 21 years, and I've helped so many different types of people achieve their goals. And I would love to help you achieve yours. I know it's January and you might be looking for a place to land. I have a virtual program and I would love to be your partner in fitness and health. So feel free to email me at info@spandexandwine, and I can get you all the details.
I developed a course to help people like use a framework because I think, like I was saying with like changing your eating habits around, when you want to change your eating habits around, you really have to identify what habits already exist in your life because, you can have all the intentions in the world to go out and buy all the vegetables and, want to cook dinner every night. But then when it comes to what your lifestyle is, you start meeting each of those nights and saying, I don't want to cook tonight. And then all of a sudden you have a week's worth of groceries that have gone bad. And it's because it's really important when you're making those adjustments that you're able to intuitively incorporate these new practices into your life. And, mindfulness, it's the same, you can have all the intentions in the world to want to calm yourself down in an anxious situation. But if you're not really like pulling back and looking at all of the kind of set up areas of your life, you won't be able to incorporate or integrate these new habits easily. And so I created a course because it's a personal identification where people, they just need the prompts to identify what the best eating habits are for them. They just need to have that information, that access to information laid out. Like you can prepare your foods this way. You can buy these things at, this store. And when people have access to that information, they're able to, better incorporate new habits and new behaviors. And so I created a framework to help people really intuitively discover mindfulness practices that will help them create behavior changes and adjustments. And that was like my own work. Like I struggled so much with trying to control things and not recognizing where I was powerless and not recognizing, the idea of cooperation, like me with the universe, me with my husband, me with my kids, me with clients. Like it's, everything's a system and you have to recognize your power and your powerlessness within each system. So my own journey is really kind of identifying that surrender to what I can't control and leaning into what I can and what I have control over.
Oh gosh, that can be so tough too. And I love what you're saying because it sounds like it's complete wellness. Like you're not doing just one piece. It's you're treating the entire person and psyche.
That's how I talk about it. Like, people are packed tight closets where they have like, their whole history of childhood. They have their experiences in relationships. They have, their demographics where you grow up, the society, the type of employers that are within those demographics. And all of that shapes our perspectives. And all of that shapes the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are, about what our place is, about what our purpose is. And, when we start getting caught up in, the struggles and suffering, it really, in my opinion, it's bringing it back to, reconnecting with who we are and what our purpose is. And, being able to see each system that we're a part of. And that's what I think that the mindfulness really is seeing that we're a part of all of these systems. And there's going to be an expectation of suffering on some, you know, level. And when we set ourselves up with a plan and a framework, we'll be able to manage that suffering. Because my perfectionism, you know, that was just my own suffering. My people pleasing, that was like my own suffering. And I just needed to like zoom out and see that I had developed that through my own conditioning and, you know, set a plan for myself to see, oh, I'm people pleasing. What can I do to sort of exit this behavior right now? Or how can I cope with this? And another thing I did a lot was ruminating. And I'm like a super overthinker. And I would get, you know, lay my head down on the pillow and I would just be going over everything, conversations, to-do lists, everything. And it creates so much suffering and it takes space from joy and it takes space from my family. And so it was super important for me to step out of all of that and see that the systems I was in had conditioned me, but I didn't have to be a victim to that. I could really empower myself to see it and I could empower myself to move through it differently.
And you hear people talk about like their critical tasks and their non-negotiables and things like that. Is that what you help people with? It's just to develop those items that you need to do on a daily basis and check in with. Okay.
Yes. And that, and it is, I think that can be scary because for me, that was something like, you know, I wasn't a super consistent person. And I think, you know, especially if you have suffered from emotional neglect, consistency is very difficult. And so, you know, because I struggled with like what designating a non-negotiable task would be for myself, it was really kind of intimidating. That people would say like, oh, if you want to be well, if you want to like participate in wellness, like choose your tasks and do them. And that was overwhelming for me. So my approach came from like an intuitive place where I'm in addition to being a master mindfulness practitioner, I'm a certified ritual guide. And so I really focus on helping people expand their existing rituals into support pillars. And people often think of rituals as something like candles and crystals, and that is. but rituals really are simply practices that help us transition our mindset from one situation to another, which is why people do the candles and the feathers and the crystals. They're just adjusting their perspective, their mindset, their time frame. So a ritual that someone might have, they may not be aware of, would be like if you get in the car. Every time you get in the car, maybe you turn the radio on, put your sunglasses on, grab a piece of gum. And it's like that thing you do every time you get in the car. And it's because that's your ritual to prep you from whatever you're doing to get ready to now being driving on the road. And so we all have these practices, these intuitive practices. Maybe every morning you wake up and brush your teeth right away, or maybe every night you write in your journal before you go to bed. These are our individual rituals. And when we habit stack on our own rituals, that's when we can start to shift our behaviors into things that we desire.
Yeah. And you're so young. I love that you figured all of this out, you know, when you were so young. But for
you.
Someone like me, you know, someone in their 50s and, you know, even 60s and 70s, I would think that we would just get a little more stubborn and in our way, in our stuck in our own, you know, practices and ways. Do you see that in your practice, or is it just the opposite that the older someone is, they're more like, may as well?
You know, I feel like the people that I have worked with that are around 50, like that's the age, they are like super open to hearing it. Like they are set in their ways and they know why, because they've walked 50 years of life, you know, and that's, that says something. Like you've experienced things, you have, you know, time stacked in you. But at the same time, I feel like that's like, that is an age where people are like, I have experienced a lot of life, but now I'm starting to see how much I haven't experienced. So that in my, you know, experience personally is a really fun age to explore this with. I think that it's the kind of 25 to 35. So funny. My husband just asked me last night, as I was talking about Facebook ads, why don't you expand your audience age and specifically. And I said, no, that like 20 to 25 age, those, they think I'm crazy. They are not at all open to the idea of connecting to your purpose. They are not open to the idea of anxiety being related to emotional neglect. But it's the same on the other end, is once you start hitting 55 and 65, it's really, and it's two sides of, and this is what I believe, it's two sides of this coin, the radical responsibility coin, because one side of radical responsibility is your empowerment, and the other side is radical blame. And there is a very, and this coin, I believe, spins our whole, the trajectory of our lives. And so I think that the side is predominantly through the perspective of radical blame. The younger somebody is or the older they are fearing radical blame. But when we get into this kind of pocket of life, you know, where we are recognizing, you know, what's behind us and what's ahead of us, that's really the radical responsibility. And it is, you know, I think that once people start to open up to radical responsibility in this stage in life, when they are in, you know, their mid-30s to mid-40s, it will carry them into that openness later in life as well. And, you know, it, I think it's so important to catch the pocket, because we do fear radical blame so much as children. And we fear radical blame so much, you know, in later years. And of course, I'm 38, so I'm like not going to say what people are experiencing. But something I talk about, you know, as a mindfulness coach is when we are mindful, we can collapse time and space, and we can be our 8-year-old self and our 80-year-old self at the same time in that moment. And, you know, when you think of who you are today and who you were when you were 14 or 7, like they say, the soul never ages. And, you know, that's really the truth, is that we know who we're going to be because our soul doesn't age. It's just the life experiences that we kind of stack around us. And it leads to our perspective, and it leads to the stories. And when we can keep our perspective with radical responsibility, we keep empowerment, we keep control, we keep participation. If we let it flip back to radical blame and we see radical responsibility as radical blame, that's when, you know, people become closed to the idea of mindfulness and emotional connection. They don't see the importance behind it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you typically start with your clients with yoga then? Because I would feel like there would be, with a lot of people, there would be a wall up and they would need to kind of start with something physical.
That is like the physical thing is the most important practice. It is, and it's, and I always say that the physical realm is what helps us reorient ourselves with reality, because our minds have no guardrails and we could think up anything. We, you know, I can fly to the moon in 10 minutes if I want to, but reality, you know, physical reality is going to help me contend with what I can really do. And it'll bring me back to truth. And when we have a physical practice, we're continually reorienting ourselves with time and space. And for me, that's like, you know, because I coach people through mindfulness, there's a confusion between what awareness is and what mindfulness is. And awareness is, you know, knowing and you know, time stamping the present moment. Mindfulness is knowing that you can be aware in all moments, and that you'll be aware in moments other than the one you're aware in now. And the awareness needs to come through every moment. So to be mindful, you want to collect awareness in every time frame. And collecting the awareness is that physical connection to your body, where you're really like feeling your feet on the ground, you're feeling your hands touch things. And as you do that, you reorient yourself with reality, you reorient yourself with experience and feelings and emotions. So much our dysregulation is based in stories. That's what it's, you know, the struggle and the suffering. And when suffering is expanded, it's based so much in stories. And those stories come from the fact that we haven't reoriented ourselves with the physical plane. And, you know, we get caught up in our mind. What does this mean? What does that mean? What's going to happen there? What's going to happen now? And when you reorient yourself with the physical plane, you don't have to do all of that. You just keep being aware step by step. And so that allowing people to ground themselves through a physical practice is like absolutely the foundational thing. And I try to, like, because it's hard. It's hard to say, like, go do a dance party and get yourself like thinking. But, you know, you kind of like step by step get up to that. You know, I'll sometimes do like little movements, like just move your hands over your head and like this and that. And it's like 90 seconds of like movements, just not because we really, and this was something I would even do with my own husband, where I'd be like, let's shake it out. This conversation is going well.
Oh, I love it.
You know? And it's so important that you just reorient yourself, because it allows you to kind of like calm down those, you know, intellectual juices that want to take you, you know, everywhere. And when you really calm it down, you can think on a leveled plane and make, you know, better decisions about your habits, about your responses, about what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think with yoga too, like just the movement you were saying kind of brings you back, but same with balance postures, because you, all of a sudden, you know, if you're in tree pose or something, okay, I'm grounded, but I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Oh, good. And you can't be thinking about your grocery list, or, you know, you're going to be falling over. So I don't think people realize that too. Like,
and that's the guardrails. It brings you right into, I can really, really only deal with one thing at a time. Like that's, you know, and it helps, you know, just calm that focus and really bring it in. And that's where I talk about rituals being support pillars. That's what it is. It's really, it keeps you, because those things we do, they're so mindless. Like when you get in and you turn the radio on and you put your sunglasses on in the car, it's mindless the way we do it. But if you bring awareness to that action and you keep stacking it, you'll feel in control of so much. You'll start to recognize how much you are in control of. And when you meet scenarios where you're really not in control, it won't feel so big. You know, you won't feel like you've stacked so many things that are out of your control. And that's, you know, we just have to do that for our own balance and regulation, is stack the good experiences and stack the places that we have levers of control, so that we don't feel so powerless, because we're not. We are as powerful as we're powerless. It's completely balanced, and that's the duality.
Yeah. Now, you know, I'm totally going to notice when I get in the car, what do I do? What are my steps that I take?
And think about it. Totally. And I encourage people, I say, that's like a good place to start, waking up and getting in the car, because people have things. And when you add like mindfulness to it, you can add other steps to it. And when you can, and that's when you habit stack, you add more steps to it. And then you can start incorporating habits into your life intuitively, not like disrupting your life with this, you know, brand new grocery list, but you're just like adding little things to show yourself that you have control.
I like that. And I like that you keep saying habit stacking. That's a great way to put it, because you don't have to do everything all at once.
No. Yeah. That's a lot.
You get to go step by step. Yeah.
Right. And give yourself the grace, because like adjustments really, they take place in so many areas. You know, you have to physically adjust what you're doing. Intellectually, you have to adjust how you think about stuff. Emotionally, you have to adjust how it's fitting in, because maybe you hate it, you know, and there's all of these, all of this energy that it really takes to incorporate new things into our lives. And doing journaling for me, like, I wanted to add the 5-minute journal into my nighttime routine to sort of help myself with sleeping, because I had, you know, I was just somebody who didn't sleep well. And a lot of the psychology behind it was like this cortisol cycle that I was stuck in. So I really wanted to calm that down with, you know, gratitude and acknowledging my day. And I wanted to do the journal at night, but I didn't have a really good bedtime routine. And so I was sort of like, you know, get the kids. Oh, I have 4 kids. So I'm like, just get them to bed.
Wow.
Everybody
okay.
quiet. And then like, you know, I would kind of slough myself off to bed whenever I could. So I was like, how am I going to get this journal done? But my husband and I had started doing oracle cards. This was part of like my healing journey, my ritual guide training. And so him and I started doing oracle cards at night. So I made a commitment to myself that I won't do the cards with my husband until I do the gratitude journal. And that was kind of how I incorporated it. And now it's something I do every day. It's been maybe like 8 months, I think, probably 8 months. And I've been doing it every day. And I absolutely love it. But, you know, it takes like little like noticing in your life where you can add it and then gently placing it in.
Mm-hmm. And I love that he's doing that with you. That's so sweet.
Yeah, he's super supportive. We both entered in therapy around the same time and kind of just went on, you know, both on our own healing journeys. And it was, we're so lucky. We're so lucky to have just a partner in this and, you know, it's my husband, so obviously father of my kids. So it's like we're the whole family, we're doing this whole healing thing together. And it's been amazing. And we actually both just like finished, we called it like graduating therapy this year. It was in, I think, I was in September and he was in October. So we just finished this year. And, you know, it's like, it's great to have a partner, but we recognize we each had our own individual work to do. It started 3 or 4 years ago with marriage counseling, but we recognized, you know, our relationship wasn't the problem. We have a wonderful relationship and we had started off as best friends and I've known him since I was 14. And we were always really good friends. But, you know, then you add in kids and you add in, you know, we both run our own businesses and, you know, it's you own a house and a dog. And it was just like everything just started to blow up. And, you know, it was helpful for us to go through that process. But we both grew so much, you know, individually, just like being open to that change. And
And great for your kids to see that.
Oh, go ahead. That's, our therapists were amazing about. They were so like, you have to think about how lucky your kids are. Like, parents in therapy, because we would often talk about how do we talk to our kids about this? Like, are our kids going to, and our therapist would always be like, it's so good. Like, let them know that it's okay to have support, community, all that. And, you know, it's nice that, you know, he does the rituals with me. We do a ritual before bedtime with the kids where we do like the, we do sound bowls, we do set an intention with the candle. And, you know, the kids sit on the pillows on the floor and we all do it together. And it's helped us really, you know, kind of set up the family traditions that we want to have. Because like I said, I'm from, you know, childhood emotional neglect and my husband, same situation. We each had our own histories that were very similar. And, you know, that we were able to bring in new things and new traditions. And, you know, when you're a cycle breaker, you're also a cycle starter. And that's like a really hard place to be, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I developed my course about, to help people who are cycle starters, you know, do this, do what we're doing and help themselves create those new habits.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your course for just a second. So when does it start? How long is it?
I'm sorry, the course?
Yeah, your course.
Oh, yes. Okay. So it's the 21-day real life reset. So it is broken out into 21 days. So that's, I tell people right at the beginning, like, give yourself this time, know that it's going to take at least, because it takes 21 days to incorporate a new habit. And the reason is we have to be able to cycle through all of our moods. And you have to give yourself at least 3 weeks to get to know all of your moods so that you can communicate with each mood about wanting to make this change. Because we do that sometimes, especially at the beginning of the year, where we want to like set a goal or a, you know, New Year's resolution. And the person, the version of us who's super motivated to do it is not the version that's carrying it out on January 15th. So it takes that time to really orient yourself with each of your moods and each version of yourself who resists, who is really motivated, who criticizes things, the perfectionist, you know, all those, whoever, you know, whatever versions you notice in yourself. So I go through a mood wheel, getting to know your moods. I go through a ritual guide so that you can identify your own rituals, you know, write them down and then stack on them. I go through creating a life binder. And that's really setting up like priorities, like birth certificates, you know, finances, all that kind of stuff. But then also chore lists, grocery, you know, different meals, things like that. Like my life binder is everything, has all my priorities in it. And that's really how my husband and I determined setting our boundaries, like for outside family, because that's another big thing. Setting boundaries as a family, setting boundaries, you know, as a person, it's not easy to do. And so I go through all that. I go through when you're new to boundaries and when you're new to creating healthy habits and all that.
Yeah. And how can people find out that information? Where would you send someone to find out about
website?
You?
Yeah, my website's themiddaylatte.com. And so everything about the course is at themiddaylatte.com. And I have a Facebook group right now. It's called New Year, More You. And I'm doing a self-care summit to bring in expert speakers, talk about different things like home organization, finances, therapy, all that stuff. And then you know, I'm going to launch the course on January 11th at the end of the summit. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for, you know, the group. Anybody can join. I'm going to keep it open. I was originally doing it just for the summit, but I'm going to change the name and I'm going to keep it open because, you know, it's, I think it's really, like, as we're talking about this right now, like the mindfulness and incorporating it in the habits, I think that's like really missing. I think that people can really use that encouragement and that access to information. So I'm going to just keep it open and keep inviting people in to, you know, practicing more mindfulness for themselves, for their families.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's connections in that group too. And I think that's so important when you're going through something, there's probably someone else that's gone through the same thing. And, you know, people have different seasons of life as well. So
exactly. And it's so important to find that connection in that community. And, you know, my two best friends are people that I met in a mom's group when I was pregnant with my oldest, who's seven now. And I met them on an app. And we've never even met in person. They live in Oklahoma and Alabama, but we text daily and they are my best friends. And, you know, it's so important, you know, that you find that community and connect with people who are experiencing the same things because they are out there. There are definitely people that know, like, your experience is completely normal. Whatever it is, I felt like mine wasn't. It is completely normal. And when you find that community, you can feel good about identifying your experience and making the changes that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. You said your oldest is seven. So you have four kids, seven and under. Wow.
I do.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's busy here.
Oh, you are busy. So to all the moms out there with young kids, I know it's, I mean, I remember back in the day, my boys are grown now, they're 30, 32. And I just remember thinking, I can't fit one more thing in. I'm overwhelmed. Sometimes we were eating dinner at 9 o'clock, this and that. So is there one thing that you would say to a young mom that maybe that she can incorporate today?
The thing that I always tell parents is to collapse time and space, because your child is seven today, but they will be 27 and 37 and 47, and they're going to judge your parenting. And so it's important that you visualize that 37-year-old adult seeing you speak to that 7-year-old child, because he is going to see it or she is going to see it. And when you collapse time and space, you can step back too and kind of slow that, the riding the waves of awareness from moment to moment. Because that's where we think we can't fit in anymore. When we're riding the waves of awareness, we think we don't have time. We can't possibly, you know, let them zip up their own jacket. We can't possibly let them leave the table without eating one more bite. Like, and when you collapse time and space, you can bring yourself out of that one moment and remember that you're going to be aware in more moments. So let that version of yourself have a judgment and have a say.
Wow. Oh, where were you when I was raising my boys? Oh, that's incredible. But that's good advice for me too, having a grandchild and another one on the way, to think about. Thank you. That, I mean, I really like that. And I love how you were talking about the difference between awareness and being mindful and mindfulness. Yeah. Cool. This has been so wonderful. I just really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to be here.
Thanks for having me. I love doing this. It's just, this is what I love.
You can tell, I can feel it. It's awesome. And I'll include all of your information in the show notes. But again, just thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Robin. It was so amazing. Thank you.
Wow. What an awesome conversation I had with Jocelyn. And afterwards, after we recorded that episode that evening, I had some interesting dreams and I woke up reflecting on items in my past and things that I want to change. So I have set my own rituals in the morning and I'm working on habit stacking just as she was talking about. But I hope that you enjoyed this episode too. Please share it with a friend. Here are a few of the takeaways. One, a mindfulness coach helps clients develop practices that bridge the gap between what you know and what you want to be doing and putting into a practice in your own life. Two, when you don't understand your purpose in life, it becomes a wedge. You can start to feel the anxiety and depression setting in. Seeking help from professionals like Jocelyn can help. Three, Everything is a system, and it is important to be able to recognize your power and powerlessness within each system. Identify and surrender to what can and can't be controlled. Otherwise, suffering can be created needlessly, taking space from joy. 4. We all have individual rituals. By habit stacking our own rituals, we can start to shift our behaviors into things we desire. 5. When we keep our perspective with radical responsibility, we keep empowerment, we keep control, we keep participation. And finally, 6, yoga can be a physical tool to help you begin to reorient yourself with reality. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you've had a fabulous start to your new year. So many wonderful things are coming to us in 2024, and I can't wait to share them with you. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, it would mean so much to me if you take a few seconds to do each or all of the following. First, follow or subscribe to Spandex and Wine. It'll help you so you don't miss an episode, and it'll help me because you won't miss any episodes. To do this, you'll just go to the podcast, click subscribe or follow wherever you are listening. Look for the plus sign or follow button, and this is one of the best things that you can do for the podcast, so thank you. If you'd also be willing to give a 5-star review, that would be amazing. And lastly, please share an episode with a friend or 5 to keep the love going. I appreciate you. Thanks.